This is my investigation of the events leading up to the swift termination of CNRP-008 neutrino detection program, and along with it, the fate of its members, consisting of Dr. Aoife Connolly, Mr. Hamish Drummond, Dr. Simon Kang, Ms. Charlotte Rigby, and Dr. Elias Tavoulouris. As it stands, the post-disaster report writes it off as an unfortunate amalgamation of poor weather, equipment failure, and mismanagement of supplies. One cannot help but wonder whether the consensus is any more than just a convenient cover-up of facts too difficult to interpret. Indeed, a careful reading of the sequence of events shows that there may be more to this than what was written in the report. This isn't my story. This is the only opportunity to hear firsthand from those who lived through it. This is Terminus. Previously, the team's effort to get Dr. Kang home was thwarted by the abrupt arrival of a storm. Together with an undetermined connectivity issue, they were effectively cut off from the mainland, having no means of travel or communication. During this downpour, Mr. Drummond made an unusual note in his log entry, detailing the apparent migration of the resident Standing Stone from the base of the islet to where the solar cell farms are situated. The situation on site escalates as Mr. Drummond concluded his evening report with the return of Dr. Tavoulouris and Miss Rigby from their subterranean expedition. This time, Miss Rigby was brought back unconscious and in need of immediate medical treatment. Here is the second entry from the same evening. It's a recording made on Dr. Connolly's office laptop about an hour before those short, abrupt updates in Mr. Drummond's log from the previous segment.
I think I might need a drink after this. Wait, are you recording this?
Yes, I'd like to have a copy of what happened, so I can listen back on it after when I write up a report.
That's fair. I guess that's why CNRP hired you. Meticulous.
Thanks. Now, are you sure I can't do anything about your arm?
No, it's okay. It's just some minor scratches when I was supporting Charlotte through the cave entrance.
Okay. Let's hear it then. What happened back there?
Well, we went down to the detector floor. I proposed we should get some more batteries for the torches in case of emergencies. And so we did. Well, I looked for them, because Charlotte needed to use the bathroom one last time before her expedition. You've not been to the facility yet, have you, Doctor? Well, the bathrooms are on the ground floor. And thinking about it, I never heard the lift ascend. I just assumed she was on her way up. I had no luck finding batteries in the main storeroom, so I started scavenging around the detector in any drawers and work desks. Before long, I heard Charlotte calling me to come over. Not knowing where she was, I just followed her voice. Of course that crazy girl went through the cave entrance all on her own. You'll remember this tight corridor from the video she showed last night. When I was halfway through it, she screamed. Malaka, that was a horrible scream.
Why didn't you radio us, then?
I'm getting to it, Hamish. Just hold on. I came to the outcrop, torch in hand, and of course, she wasn't there. Her equipment was set up, ready for the abseil that we planned to do. I pointed the torch down the precipice. She wasn't there either. Until then, it didn't occur to me that she may have gone ahead to the place we saw the previous day. If she was hurt down there, I couldn't bring her up this sheer drop even if I went down to help her myself. So I spoke to you guys through the DTE. But there was nothing, Hamish. Nothing. Maybe we were too far down or something. All I heard was some strange static. Now, it wasn't like the usual white noise. Whatever it was, my mind kept associating it with how dusty the place was. At that point, I thought it best to come back up to get some help. Seems sensible, right? But something about the cave we're in felt unsafe. I didn't want to leave Charlotte there on her own, so I began to look for another way down. Darkness was choking, but with a handheld torch and my headlights, I located a slope near the corridor we just walked out of. It was a little steep, but it was better than scaling up the drop. Seriously, can I get a drink?
Mr. Drummond, would you be so kind? We can pause this until you return.
Get a drink.
How could something so good taste like a hangover? Thanks, Hamish. Right. So, I went down the incline and began to search for Charlotte. The place was so huge I couldn't even see the end of it in the dark. But I knew where she might be, because we saw it on our last visit. I hurried across the black space that separated our last vantage point and the monument. I didn't think about it then, but for a natural cave, the floor was surprisingly smooth. I thought I heard some trickling water nearby too.
You need to focus, Elias.
Sorry. Anyway, the site was closer than I thought, and soon I was at the periphery. I confess I halted momentarily, in awe and, frankly, in disbelief. This wasn't natural. Sorry, let me get this right. I'm not advocating some supernatural nonsense here, but the site was... it was man-made, human-made, sorry, but it was put together. There were these pillars, I don't know, about 3 meters tall, almost as tall as the precipice we stood on. I say pillars, but they are really just large columns of rock. Each one distinct with a slight different slant or jaggedness. It's the fact that they are placed equidistant from one another that inspired this notion of design. This around the middle structure, probably some sort of pattern, I couldn't tell in the dark. Looking through them, looking for Charlotte, it was like walking through a forest, columns after columns. I would have gotten lost in the dark had it not been for the curious case that the central structure is always visible, no matter how one meanders through the cold, stony pillars. Whatever intuition I had, it was right. Past the rocks is a clearing where the centerpiece monument stands. It was maybe 2 stories high? It's hard to tell, but it certainly loomed over the other pillars around it. It looked like some sort of tent from the folds I could see near to the ground. I think it was painted over. It was some sort of matte black, but I didn't pay too much attention to it. For this is also where Sarah lay unconscious. Close to her, there was a singular rock column. I tried to wake her then, but she was not responding at all. It was bizarre. Kneeling there next to Charlotte, all at once this trickling sound was no longer audible, and I don't know, there was this dreadful sense of isolation in place of it. It sounds crazy, right? I feel the same way recounting this. Then I saw, or thought I saw, the folds of the tent drift as though caressed by some subterranean sigh. There was nothing to it in retrospect, but at that very moment, I didn't want to remain there any longer. So I hold Charlotte onto my back, what's it called in English, a piggyback, that's right. I retraced my steps back to the incline, left the cave and came up here. I didn't even know she was bleeding until we were in the lift.
Sorry you went through that.
Better me than you, huh?
What do you think happened to her down there?
I really can't say. Maybe she slipped and hit her head on that pillar next to her.
There is no time to scream when you slip. A yelp, maybe, but not a scream.
Yeah, good point. You're right. It was definitely a scream. It was guttural. I've never heard anything like it before.
Well, thanks for sharing this with us, Elias. You should go get some rest now. I'll take the first watch over Charlotte to make sure she's okay. Mr. Drummond, would you mind taking over later?
Not at all.
Before you retire, Mr. Drummond, may I have a word with you?
Here the recording ends. There are no records of Dr. Davoulouris and Mr. Drummond's conversation from that evening. The next update comes from the following morning, where Dr. Connolly recorded the following voice note on her laptop.
This is Team B's medical aide, Dr. Aoife Connolly, making an official audio report for the CNRP-008 programme. A written transcript will follow shortly when time allows. This is a report concerning the welfare of Miss Charlotte Rigby, a member of Team B's Particle Physics Division. On the 19th of October, at approximately 5 p.m. British Summer Time, Dr. Davoulouris returned from the facility, supporting an unconscious and bleeding Miss Rigby. As we had still to determine the full extent of her injuries, we laid her on the couch to assess the situation. The principal injury is a gash on the left side of her head. I suspect the bleeding was worse before they arrived, as blood clotting was already evident. the wound was cleaned and treated there and then. Having made sure that there were no broken bones or sprains, we moved her up into her bedroom where she is recuperating now. We'll need to wait for Miss Rigby to wake up before we can do an assessment of potential fractures or trauma. Dr. Tavoulouris put forward a hypothesis that she slipped and knocked herself unconscious, but the severity of the wound does not give it much weight. Unless she fell from a height, which isn't the case according to Dr. Tavoulouris' testimony, I am inclined to believe this injury is caused by a blunt object. By no means is this an easy conclusion, but I suspect an element of malicious agency here. It is therefore my professional obligation to follow through with this line of thought. After Miss Rigby was brought to her room, I requested the men to wait for me in my office and that I would join them after some final examinations. I seized this moment of privacy to look for signs of struggles and potential violations. Thankfully, to both searches, I was unfruitful. We'll have to wait until Miss Rigby recovers to understand this better. I later joined Mr. Drummond to hear Dr. Tavoulouris' testimony. I even have it recorded for future references. After that, both retired to bed while I took first watch over Miss Rigby. There were no significant changes to her condition overnight. However, there have been a few occasions where Miss Rigby appeared to speak. No, it was not really an article of speech, nor was it a case of snoring either. Rather, she made deliberate, aperiodic clicking noises with her tongue, like... No, I'm not doing a great job here. Frankly, it sounds stupid when I do it. Mr. Drummond has taken over the shift to look after Miss Rigby. I have instructed him to record it if it happens again. I'm worried about where this is going. Even though Miss Rigby's injuries are not life-threatening, we still have to find out who's responsible for this, and none of the outcomes I could think of look particularly inviting. Right. Best get some sleep before my next shift. End report.
In preparation for the rest of this segment, I'm going to play the audio correspondence between Dr. Kang and his sister-in-law, Madeline. These audio files are retrieved from a messaging application on his phone found on site. Despite the telecommunications issue that was previously flagged in Mr. Drummond's report, some of these messages have nonetheless been received successfully by Dr. Kang, though none of his replies, text, or audio recordings made it beyond the outbox. I will begin with a recording to which Dr. Kang's attempted reply was recorded on the 11th of October.
Simon, hey, it's Maddie. Just to let you know that Hannah's staying with us for the time being. Fee said she told you about that already, but I thought I'd let you know I've picked up your girl from nursery. Poor baby. I think she knows just enough to be worried about her mummy. Anyway, I'll keep you posted on Fee's checkup at the hospital. Good night. Hey, just came back from the hospital. The CT scans returned negative. The doctors are keeping her... Hold on a second. Archie, get down there, please. Down, please. Thank you. Sorry. The doctors are keeping her there for a few more days to run some other tests. Fee mentioned that you have poor Wi-Fi up there. I hope you're getting these updates all right. No leads. The tests are showing nothing and she's getting a little worse every day. Have you noticed any recent changes in her diet, sleeping pattern, or, I don't know, anything? The doctors are asking. I think they're fishing for some clues on what direction to look next. So that's what all those years of medical school get you. Anyway, are you still having difficulty with the connection? I know it's not the South, but technology can't be that bad up there, right? I'm about to pick up Hannah from nursery. She's not too happy these days. Such a brave little trooper, still being all polite and sweet in front of us, but I can tell she misses her dad. Will you be able to send her some sort of message? I can relay it if it helps.
This next one arrives a week later.
They've admitted her into the ICU. I managed to catch one of the doctors a moment ago to find out what's happened. She's had a stroke. A brain hemorrhage, he said, and a severe one at that. I'm not going to lie to you, Simon. She is in critical condition at the moment, and I aren't sure how long she's going to hold out for. I'm going to go home and pick up Hannah on the off chance her mum wakes up from that. Please get here as soon as you receive this. I don't know how long she's got.
The following is an entry from Dr. Tavularis's digital log. The timestamps shows that this was started on the 21st of October, but the last modifications were made on the 27th. I will come back to this point later. Here is the final version.
It has been over a day since I brought Charlotte back from the facility, and still there is no clear sign of improvement. Dr. Connelly has recorded my statement 2 nights ago, so I will not rehash it here, only that it was unwise of me to approve of this expedition in the first place. It seems like complacency and boredom has gotten the better part of my judgment. I should not have allowed Charlotte to proceed with a second trip down, and I will have to take full responsibility, come what may, when we submit a report to CNR. Aoife has set up a rota between Hamish and herself. They will take shifts to look after Charlotte as long as she remains unconscious. When offered to volunteer for shifts, the good doctor recommended that I take some time aside to recover from this ordeal. She was well-meaning and professional about it, but in truth, I sense that she may find me suspect. I do not blame her for it. 2 people go into a secluded area. Then 1 returns with a head injury that looks more like an infliction than an accident. I would not be surprised if they do not believe my statement. In any case, I did not prompt the doctor to reveal her covert motives. There is already a growing anxiety among us, possibly sourced by this never-ending storm. We are lucky that Charlotte's immediate injuries were easily dealt with, using what's available on site, but we can't rule out completely the need to send her to a nearby hospital. That would be a real problem, seeing we have difficulties communicating with the mainland over radio. Simon is possibly bearing the worst of us all. He's all the more desperate to go home now, especially learning that his wife has entered ICU yesterday. He proposed that we use the motorboat to get across the Orkney mainland. Frankly, it was a ridiculous speech. The sea will swallow us up for sure in this storm. The 4 of us discussed it last night, and good sense prevailed, as both Hamish and Aoife agreed that it is too dangerous, suicidal even. Nevertheless, I can sympathize with Simon. I admit that I too am eager to leave this island, at least until the detector is fixed and we can resume work. The lack of a structured life in these confined spaces, it does something funny to you. Heightens the senses, maybe. No point on dwelling on that. For now, I must concentrate working with James to get in touch with the mainland again. I'll find him later. He's probably on shift with Charlotte at the moment. His dog has been pretty restless these days. I can always hear Pluto barking and whining in Charlotte's room when James is on duty. I think he may have handed the dog over to Simon for a walk outside. That might be good for poor Simon. Keep his mind occupied while we wait for this fucking storm to be over. Maybe I'll heed the doctor's advice and have a nap. I can't believe I'm still exhausted from the excursion out of the cave.
The following is an audio recording taken on Dr. Connolly's laptop. At the beginning of the video, the doctor explains that she will be recording her time spent watching over Miss Rigby in the hopes of recording the noise she heard from her first shift 2 nights ago. Most of the recording consists of various background noises, so I will skip straight to the relevant section near the end.
Charlotte? Charlotte, are you awake?
Dr. Connolly? How long have I... How my head?
Take it easy, Charlotte. You've hit your head hard. It's the 21st of October today. You've been unconscious for nearly 2 days now.
What? Why was I asleep? Oh. Oh no. I remember it now. I...
Slowly now. I'm going to do some checks, Charlotte.
No, wait, Aoife. I'm all right for now, but please, will you call the others? Everyone needs to know about this.
That can wait. We need to make sure you're...
Please! I'm begging you, we can do this later.
Oh, Charlotte. Oh, Repusti. I am happy to see you awake now. Are you feeling better?
Yeah, thanks.
Boy. Pluto. Good.
Okay. Mr. Drummond, maybe it's best we leave the dog elsewhere.
Shoo. Downstairs, boy. I thought I'd bring him to cheer you up, as he's taken a liking to you. But that stupid dog's been acting up lately.
All right. We're all here now. What is it that you wanted to tell us about? Charlotte, are you okay?
Yes, I'm fine. I know you won't believe what I have to say, but just promise me. Promise me that nobody is to go down at those caves again. None of us here, and nobody else, ever again.
It's okay. You can tell us.
There's something down there, Aoife. Now, I know what this sounds like, okay? But you have to trust me on this. Please, you have to. More than that, we need to leave this place. It isn't safe. Please, Hamish, Elias, we need to go now. Or tomorrow morning, or...
Hold on, lass. You're all over the place. What's the danger? Is this how you got bashed in the head? What did you see?
I didn't see anything. I heard it. I don't want to talk about it. I just want us all to leave this place.
Okay, Charlotte. We'll get connected with the emergency services and we'll get you to a hospital soon, all right?
No, it's not just me. We need to leave. It's not safe here, and we need to return to our families. It told me about Felicity. She's,
Felicity? Who's Felicity?
Wait, is this some kind of sick joke?
I'm sorry, Simon. She's not gonna make it.
Like I said, this isn't my story. These documents contain the truth of what really happened to those involved in the CNRP-008 program, and I'm going to uncover it. This is the only opportunity to hear firsthand from those who lived through it. This is Terminus.